So, Maddie, it's lovely to interview, have the opportunity to talk to you about your commission that was originally made for the Royal Society of Sculptors in 23, and you created it in response to the theme of parade, and it's now seen here displayed parading outside the
Yes.
front of the
Yeah.
art house in Wakefield, and it's a very different context, but it's also Wakefield's an incredibly rich history of sculpture, not least Barbara Hepworth. And I know that you're returning. You've come to see it. You haven't seen it for a while.
Yep, haven't seen it for nearly a year actually,
Wow.
since Dora House. I haven't actually been to Wakefield. I have been before, but not since the sculpture's been installed.
And so this is your first piece in the public realm that you've made in response to the theme parade. And I wondered, the title of it is The Double Act,
Yeah.
and it is two sort of limbs, four limbs,
Yeah.
walking in unison. There's an element of sort of Laurel and Hardy. But I wonder if you could talk a bit about the title.
Yeah, so the title came up when I was thinking about the theme of parade, and this was sort of right at the beginning when I was going to be doing the proposal. After the shortlisting, I was going to be doing the maquette and also the proposal, and I thought it would be great to have two figures rather than sort of one figure or one sort of central piece, because I wanted to have this idea of plurality. So this idea that parade is like it's like a procession, or it's like a group of people. So I wanted to sort of get that across in the work. And I started working with two pieces of wood initially, and found objects, and quite quickly they seemed to suggest two figures to me, and hence the double act came about. And the title is also refers to kind of lots of other sort of descriptions of the double act. It could be a double act in terms of the same person trying to juggle lots of different things, like sort of multitasking. So thinking about the busyness of contemporary life, and or the double act can also be like an act, like a circus act or something like that. So I wanted to have that kind of sort of performative sort of feel right from the start in the title.
And I'm aware that sometimes your titles are there before the work. Was this the case in this with this commission?
I think I had the title quite early on, actually, when I found the objects I was going to work with, and that did help me. And yes, quite often the title comes before. And but this time I would say it came sort of around the same time.
And the sort of found object that you that really was the starting point was the tree, the sort of
Yeah, so the starting point were the branches. They were quite small branches actually. And there was also the red shoe, which was a found shoe, like a red child's toy. And then the lampshades were really tiny lampshades, like the ones that you would get for side lights in sort of old houses. And so I had four of those, and I thought, yeah. And actually, initially, I was going to use, I've got some other, I had, do have quite a lot of lampshades actually. I was going to use some other ones, but these ones later on, I thought, no, these are the right size for the maquette. So I then used them. And then the glove part and the flower part I actually made myself. So those were not found, but the textiles I had already. And actually, no, the glove was a found glove on the maquette. I found that because as time went on, I was being asked by everyone how I was going to make this glove. And it kind of sent me into a bit of a panic because I kept being asked this.
So this, I mean, what you're describing, which I think is You know, I think in this sculpture, you've scaled up, and it's the first time you've created something in the public realm, and there's got to be a certain kind of robustness to it and an element of pragmatism in terms of it being in a public space. But I think listening to you talk about these elements, there is this kind of hybrid quality of your work that comes together, this, you know, the natural object, or the natural world, with the detritus that you come across and collect. And also, I think, you know, the flower and the glove, there's an element of comedy, which I wanted to touch upon, but also this kind of chintz, you know, a kind of the lampshades, you know, I suppose how all these objects denote different elements, different sort of cultural elements that come together.
Yeah. I mean, I was also thinking very much about this idea of having fun indoors, and then the sort of things that happen in people's houses that nobody knows about.
Mm.
And it's not just about going out, but that kind of dancing on tables in a house party or something, or it's that sort of fun behind locked doors aspect of it. And I think that came out after of the sort of the lockdown, when everyone was having to stay at home, and nobody could really go out very much, and that sort of feeling of, well, we have to entertain ourselves at home, or, you know, what can we do now that we're at home, and sort of craving to go somewhere. So it was also referencing that, this, and then that's how I started using lampshades. So the lampshade idea, I've used lampshades in other works as well, and so this is the second time I've used lampshades. I think I used one lampshade before, which was quite small, and so yeah, so it felt like something quite familiar to me to use, but in terms of the figures, the bases of the figures, it seemed to work very well. But I think everything that I use, I'm always thinking about what are the sort of why am I using this object? You know, what's the sort of meaning of it? So if the meaning doesn't fit, then probably I wouldn't use that object. So I'm really quite strict about that, because I think anything that's part of a sculpture, or anything that's done in material terms, is really does reflect in the work, you know, so that it has to be thought about. Those considerations have to be sort of really, they're really serious, because they stay with the work after that.
And I think, I mean, you touched upon the kind of, you know, the pandemic and the I guess us, the kitchen disco, the living room disco, and everyone, you know, the kind of how we had to entertain ourselves, but also the rather darker element of isolation, and, you know, the fact that there's two figures. And I mean, there's sort of two points I wanted to ask you about. One is, I guess, that more serious element and darker element of the experience of the pandemic, which I think it's easy to forget. But also the kind of humour in your work and in this piece, you know, the element that, you know, it's the double act.
Mm.
The comedy, the comedic element of those comedy duos. And I wondered if you sort of would talk about that, that sort of tension may not be the right word, but that the combination of the lightness of touch and humour, but also with an underlying seriousness. And
yeah, and I think that humour is really important, and that kind of comedic aspect to it. And I wanted the figures to sort of be not perfect, and they're quite sort of varied, you know, so I wanted to get across that kind of something quite diverse about them, but also this thing about kind of falling around laughing and larking around, and that sort of fun element to it, because a parade is something that is fun, it's celebratory. So I wanted to get that across, but then also, like you say, thinking about the darker aspects, so referencing pollution, for example, ocean pollution, because the original shoe was a found plastic shoe that would have been in the ocean, you know, had probably gone down from some river in some sort of garbage and had gone into the sea and then had been washed up. And then similarly, the textiles are also, most of them were on the way to the landfill. And that's such a big polluter of the environment. So I deliberately wanted to use those sorts of elements. And especially thinking about the work being in the public realm, I wanted that kind of to get across that message of the sort of the materials that don't decay, that we're actually left with, and what are we going to do about them? What can we do about them? Is there a way of being creative about this? So that was very much on my mind, because that, yeah, like, you know, anyone can see that work as they're going past.
Mm.
And it's so different from, you know, choosing to come into a gallery.
Mm. It's an opportunity to be, to sort of have a far greater audience. And it's also, it's seen in the context of all the other street furniture and architecture, but also all the other detritus that is also part of your work. And I guess, I think that's an element that is in your practice. And I think I'm struck that the double act is also makes me think of, and this is the kind of verbal and the visual, but also double take. And I think in your work, there's, you know, in the sculpture, there's this immediate recognition of two legs walking, and then this settling on these familiar objects of whether it's a lampshade, a boot, a glove, textile. And I think that, you know, that double take that we do when you see very familiar objects that have just been discarded.
Mm.
And I wondered if you could talk a bit about your process in the way that you, I guess the material quality of your work and your sort of the way that you collect and acquire, your acquisitiveness.
Yeah, so I collect quite specific things, and I have them in categories in my studio. So the kind of objects I collect that I'm drawn to are wood is one sort of material that I absolutely love and I feel very passionately about. And then plastic, which has tarnished, or it's got the signs of decay in it, so that it's got that sort of patina, that sort of weathered look, which almost makes it look like it's natural. And some of these found plastics are actually really beautiful. And it's interesting, it's that, like, that double take thing, because looking at it, oh, this is so beautiful, and then thinking, oh, this is a piece of plastic, you know, this is causing ocean pollution. So there's that aspect to it as well. So I think what appeals to me are sort of kind of human-made sort of waste, which has got the, but then there's something poetic about it in the way it's, the elements have interacted with it. And then also natural, just finding natural sort of objects like seashells, sort of particularly oyster shells I feel drawn to. And thinking about the synergy between them and thinking about the combination of them. So I think shells are really beautiful, and I'm always sort of torn as to kind of whether they can be used in my work, whether I can, what does this mean? Is it serious enough, or it's, we, you know, shells are very beautiful and lots of people collect them. So I want to get away from that. But at the same time, I do want to kind of honour that beauty as well.
I mean, listening to you talk, I was very privileged to join you on the shore of the Thames on a very sunny early morning, mudlarking, and which I don't know whether you want to sort of talk about what mudlarking is.
No, that was really great that morning. So mudlarking is it's sort of, it's more a kind of a London term, I think. And that's when I first heard about it, is sort of related to the foreshore and what kind of is left on the foreshore when the tide is out and then washed back in, because Thames has a very rich history of there's a lot of Roman artifacts and kind of, there's that sort of the rubbish aspect to it that's been kind of there for a long, long time. And then there's some really valuable objects as well that are sometimes discovered. So I think it's that sort of feels like treasure. But it's mainly kind of bone, shells, coins.
Glass,
yeah.
And ceramics. Then, but I was struck that while I found glass and shells and bones, and you really were attracted to a piece of plastic that had kind of eroded and discoloured over time. And actually, when you held it in your hand, you looked at it alongside an oyster shell. And it was this, I guess, this kind of decay of something that's very human-made, was once brightly coloured and had these, we sort of thought it might be a piece of cleaning equipment, a kind of green plastic end to something that you would do the dishes with or scrub a floor. So there was an abrasive quality. But as the sea and the Thames had kind of eroded and over time discoloured this piece of plastic, it looked not unlike a kind of urchin, shell-like quality. And I'm just very aware that how in this sculpture, but also in your other assemblages, you do kind of present us with a human-made world that has both meets in your work with the natural found wood or, objects that you collect, but somehow you manage, and I think Sarah Shin touches upon it, the sort of aesthetics of erosion, the fading of elements, the imprints of time. And I think that I felt very much that having read Sarah's essay, shed light on your work, but then actually watching you collect and acquire and show me those two objects together, I was just very struck by that.
Yeah. And I realized that my excitement was, usually I'm collecting on my own, and I thought, I was aware of my excitement and your sort of surprise.
Bemused. I was enjoying my glass and bones. but it made me look, I think what it did, and I think this is often what I always think of about artists, it just made me look at the world in a complete, in a completely different way.
Yeah.
And I think also I could see, I felt very privileged to be part of that process.
Yeah, I mean, it was great to kind of have you there and sort of be, because it's so beautiful as well. It's such a kind of, I feel privileged to be kind of walking around finding these, this treasure. And really my treasure was that plastic brush-like thing. And I've actually got it at home and I just look at it every day. Sometimes I think it looks like a hedgehog, a very small hedgehog, but it's just so beautiful. I mean, the colour, the way the bristles have sort of worn down. So my eye is really drawn to that, to those sorts of elements that I think sometimes people do just walk past. Actually, they just sort of ignore them. But not necessarily ignore them, but they're not drawn to them, or their perception isn't sort of tuned to that, finding those objects.
I'm also very aware that whilst We're on the shore of the Thames on a beautiful sunny morning, big blue skies and a kind of beach, and this space between the shore and the river and the sea is a really also quite dark space, and that history, that incredible history of London, and we were at Greenwich, and obviously in front of the Greenwich museums and the history of, you know, of colonialism and people's travel. And I guess that's an area that your work touches upon. And I wondered if you wanted to sort of...
Yeah, I mean, I think that's quite recent that sort of location has become kind of a really big part of my life. And it's also feels like living in the work, as it were. And so constantly I feel as if I'm thinking about, because it has such a rich maritime history, that I'm constantly just immersed actually in colonial history, which I think is quite, there's no chance about that. I think that's happened in quite a, that's quite a deliberate sort of situation to be in, but I feel it's sort of very rich and fertile for me to be thinking about these kind of ideas, especially as I feel kind of very drawn to museum collections, and to having been part of the 2020 project and done my residency at the Lighthouse, not the Lighthouse, Lightbox. Thinking about
easily
the sea.
Done.
Now I feel primed to be kind of looking at the collections in actually, that are very close to me in the Greenwich museums. And I'm interested in boats and ships, and a lot of the wood that I collect, that I use, is actually from boats that's fallen off boats. And then the ocean debris, some of it's sort of fishing debris that's sort of has been left in this river, left in the sea. And I'm interested in how that can now be represented in a different way, actually, but still kind of have that quality of journeys across oceans, thinking about migration, thinking about exile, and sort of missing what is home and missing home, and that sort of longing is very alive.
And we were just on the shore. It was just to the right of the Cutty Sark. And I'm really was very aware of that history. And I know that also you've also it's not just the Thames, it's also the sea that you've collected from as well.
Yeah. I mean, the collecting from the sea, from the seashore, kind of started much earlier on. And that was actually the kind of a real turning point for me in my practice. And that's when I started thinking about how oceans touch different lands, and in a sort of, if I close my eyes, I can imagine this water sort of lapping up against a beach in somewhere in India. And so it all starts to feel close together.
Kind of connected.
Yeah, connected together. And that was my sort of my first kind of idea in terms of beginning to work in this way with objects that had come from the water. And then the sort of collecting from the river has sort of started kind of probably in the last 3 or 4 years with, and that's really interesting as well, but it is quite different, I think. And it's almost like certain sets of materials and objects are part of the Thames, whereas with the ocean, it can be really much more diverse and much larger objects can become sort of washed up, and some of them are so big and so heavy that they stay on the shore and for ages. Actually, it's very hard to, you know, to move them, or the sea doesn't move, take them in again.
It takes time. It's the time, isn't it, that it takes. I was aware as well when we were there on the shore, and we came across a kind of group of bones that had all been washed up together. And in a way, I just couldn't necessarily see that. It was you that pointed it out. But then you also talked about how some of the bones were used as ceramic tools.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about your recent body work that you made for the light box, which we have in the collection now. And I just wondered about that sort of that body of working with ceramics in that way that was quite a departure.
Yeah. I think working with ceramics came about because of a funded project, and working with ceramics lends itself to looking at museum collections because there's quite a lot of ceramics in museums, and then that sort of became quite a good fit, a good way of working. And also, I wanted to combine the ceramics with the found materials, which I also did for some of the works for the commission. But then this idea of using found objects as tools, actually, I've taken those bones. I was using them yesterday in the ceramic studio. I laid them all out on the workbench, and I was telling telling the ceramicists that were there, saying, you know, this is going to be used for this, and you know, and then somebody took out some credit cards and they said, you can use one of these, you know. So it's this idea of using found materials as tools, which is what would have happened before. And so I think that's really interesting. I feel really drawn to finding sort of shapes.
So these were sort of, you know, they were bones from an animal, you know, so whether it was a kind of, you know, rib bone or a kind of clavicle shoulder bone, they kind of lent themselves almost, and also they were so washed and discolored that they felt like tools. There is something very physical.
Yeah, because you can hold them and they're quite small. And so, yeah, so they lend themselves to making details. So that's really interesting for me. Because it kind of loops around, doesn't it? Sort of using the objects in the process. And so the objects can be used as part of the work, but also in the process.
Well, I suppose you do that in your work with your concern and the way that you highlight the climate, you know, the climate and the crisis of pollution and plastics with the nat, you know, kind of becoming part of these hybrid forms that are kind of sometimes, I think, quite grotesque. Mm-hmm. There's a kind of grotesqueness to them. I don't know if that's something. Do you feel that's a?
Yeah, I think there is, but then I think there's also a beauty, and it's quite double-edged. I think some things are just they are just grotesque and can't be sort of. There has to be some kind of attraction, I think.
I'm struck where there's that French term, joli laid, which is beautiful ugly, where there's that sort of pull, you know, there's that attraction, but also a kind of recoil.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I think you draw, you know, you have these incredible details and with textiles or, but then also a kind of recoiling as you sort of look in more detail.
Yeah.
And I was thinking of your recent body of work with the birds.
Yeah.
That, you know, there's this incredible beauty, but also when your eye begins to unpick what you're looking at. It's also it's shocking as well, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think the birds is series is a very shocking sort of, feels to me very shocking, because the whole series is came about because I saw the contents, dissected contents of a seagull's stomach, which had many plastic objects in it, including a lighter and various other things. It was really kind of gruesome to look at this. Mm. And then that image has stuck in my mind.
And it's this cycle of the natural world, you know, of the human made becoming part of the natural world, and actually, you know, that eroded piece of plastic is there in nature, and becoming ingested by birds and, you know, and us as well.
Yeah. And then the birds are actually using the plastic, you know, to make their nests, and it's becoming part of the ecosystem. Mm. So that's also another sort of very kind of tense situation, is if beaches are cleaned up, then sometimes you're disrupting a whole ecosystem with sort of taking something away that's been embedded there for a while.
Yeah.
So
Mel, it's been lovely hearing you talk about the double act, and we've spoken about your work, which ranges from assemblages, ceramics, sculpture, but also I know you make beautiful watercolours, and just the many mediums that you work with, and that I've seen your work. And I wondered what was next. And I'm very aware that in the way that the double act has the first piece that you've made in the public realm that you have kind of scaled up. And I guess what is the kind of impact of that, or how that's impacted your work? And also, I guess, both the double act, there's a performative element to it, but also that it is in the public realm, and it's animated by us, by audiences. Mm. And I wonder what the next step might be, thinking of those elements.
Yeah, so the process was very different for me compared to my kind of previous works. So I feel really inspired to make other pieces in the public realm with kind of similar processes. As this was the first one, I think I learned a great deal about all the different processes that I used that I hadn't used before, such as bronze casting, 3D scanning and 3D printing, as the shoe is scaled up and printed in 3D resin. And then the steel armatures are made by metal fabricators. So, and the wooden parts of the sculptures are actually kind of quite consistently have been part of my previous sculptures. So I feel there's been quite a nice transition using those elements and then scaling up the work. And I'm also really interested in this idea that, you know, you can have works outside that people don't need to come into the gallery and see. So it's a way of kind of, it makes it so much more accessible. So I'm really interested in kind of future public art commissions, actually, but they have to be right, because there's a lot of emphasis on, you know, durability and using really kind of materials that are very permanent, like bronze and marble and so on. So I think there needs to be a shift in commissioning, actually, so that more kind of materials that are reclaimed can be used. And maybe there's a different way of commissioning, you know, thinking about the sort of what needs to be replaced or repaired after a certain time scale. And it can be done, because seeing the work today, it's been outside for over a year, and actually it's, you know, done really well. I'm now confident that I can sort of make these kind of, using the processes, it's possible to make work that has an environmental focus, but for the public realm.
And that has a robustness, and I know that you work with engineering, you know, that involves collaborating in so many ways that you hadn't done before.
It was like making kind of about five different sculptures.
It's great to see it standing the test of time for the last year, and it's on at the Art House for until
It's here till the middle of July.
middle of the July, so there's an opportunity to see it before then, and who knows where it will go next. But it's also really exciting to see what you will do next, given that experience of working in the public realm, but also at scale, and how you have taken your practice with you and kind of accommodated it.
Because I didn't want to really compromise more than I had to, and I wanted the essence of the sort of the found materials to kind of stay. So that I think that has been achieved, and there's something about the serendipity of finding materials that work, and if something's kind of meant to work, it does. That sort of element in my practice that I really like.
Well, thank you, Maddie, and look forward to the next act.
Thank you. Thank you
Okay.
very much, Sarah.
Thanks.
It's been great talking to
Really
you.
enjoyed it. Okay, then.